Good evening, everyone. Thanks for joining us for the December 11th briefing for City Council. We've got a handful of items to go over with you today, and we do have a hard stop just before 7 o'clock, because we have another meeting that will be starting up in the other room. The first item that we have on here for you is a Project Opioid update. Back in October, we discussed with Council at a briefing about how you wanted to proceed with determining distribution of funds that we are receiving through the state as part of nationwide settlement with opioid producers. At that point, you also tapped Councilman Dilhorn to be the liaison from the elected officials to this particular issue. And since that time, he and I have had a couple phone conversations with representatives from Project Opioid. The second conversation we had, we actually drew in some people from the Northeast Florida Regional Council. One of the things that was explained to us was that over the past year, the Northeast Florida Regional Council had actually facilitated a SWOT analysis for all of Duval County: strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. A copy of that report is attached to the packet that was sent out to you, so you could get an idea of what was actually done and the recommendations that came out of it. The discussion that we had was whether or not a SWOT analysis should be performed for the Beaches communities. Following our initial conversations, we were also able to get both Neptune Beach and Atlantic Beach involved in the call as well with Northeast Florida Regional Council. And coming out of that call, we all agreed that we would go back to our councils to see if this was something that was perceived to be a good direction to go. And we happened to be the first ones to be bringing it back to the Jacks Beach City Council. It's anticipated that both Neptune and Atlantic will likely discuss this in January with their elected officials. But at this point, what we're seeking is some direction from Council on whether or not you think the SWOT analysis is the right way to go. And if so, we would bring that information back to the group and see if the other two communities are willing to participate or whether it would just be specific to Jacks Beach. And if that is a direction of going down the road of a SWOT analysis, the next steps would be to identify Northeast Florida Regional Council as the facilitator, and more importantly, starting to identify who the community stakeholders are that would be participative in the process. And as you can imagine, the SWOT analysis stakeholders will likely include people from the healthcare industry, from the education facilities, et cetera, et cetera. So with that being said, I believe Council Member Horn and I are open for any questions you might have and looking to see what kind of direction you might have for us. And Bill, if you've got anything you want to add.
I'll say that the City of Jacksonville that's a good analysis. There's a lot of information in there. It does not break out as much about what we're going to be experiencing. And then, of course, we just need to make sure we do this right. We've got, if you look at it, $1.8 million over 18 years. Sounds like a large number, but it's really not. Because the treatment, the options are treatment, prevention, and then kind of that catch-all of other. I know some of the things out here at the beach, I know these folks would be able to find a lot more information. In my opinion, I think it'd be reasonable just to get them to give us more information about what all of the opportunities are and strength, weakness, opportunities, threats are out here at the beach for us to be able to make better decisions. Because I do have a lot of knowledge about substance abuse and treating patients with that, but at the same time, I'm not the end-all be-all.
Seems like a really prudent first step.
I agree.
Where we want to go with it.
That way we know, we have a better idea of what we're looking at here at the beach and what would be the best approach for our community.
And if they do it with all three beaches, I think that'll be helpful to everybody. Mm-hmm. And at the end, we may be able to combine some of our resources. We did talk about, there's some information there about Project Save Lives, which I have worked with personally over at Memorial in the emergency room. It's a group, they hire people who are previous, people who had substance abuse problems in the past, so they walk the walk and they talk the talk, and they go in there and they help these people. And when they come in, whether they're looking for alcohol, opiates, whatever substance they're looking for help from, one of the things I thought about initially, I mentioned to Mike, was that I don't know if there's a need out here at Baptist Beaches or something like that. There's a great need at Memorial because these facilities are large catchment areas for these patients. That's a huge help there, and it kind of sets them out into it puts them out with all the resources in the community and helps them. There's a lot of options that are available, but.
Are we able to get the data from JFRD on any of the overdoses that they have responded to in Jacksonville Beach?
The one thing that I think we attached to the packet is data specific to our zip code 32250. So it does include a little bit of the west side of the ditch, but that overdose information is the only thing that they had to provide to us at this point in time.
And it made it and the numbers are not huge, but at the same time, they're, you know, and the question is going to be is which, you know, which, are they coming to Baptist Beaches? Are they coming, or, you know, yeah, we want to treat people that are in our area, but at the same time.
And as you can imagine, the data for the 32250 varies greatly from zip code throughout all of Duval County. So while the SWOT analysis for Duval was a very broad brush, and the recommendations were broad brush for all of Duval, it's not specific to our zip code and the issues that we're seeing within our community or here at the beaches. And that's one of the reasons that the SWOT, or focused SWOT, was recommended as the next step for us.
And the other thing that is very hard to tease out of this would be that, you know, you say you have a bunch of people overdose in Jacksonville Beach. I mean, are they our residents? Are they visitors? I mean, you know, so we're gonna put this massive, you know, if we put something into play that, you know, it may, or maybe a bunch of people in 32250 go overdose in 32216, or, you know, so it's, I'd like to see what other things are out here at the beach. I think next step would be good.
What's the, for each distribution, how long do we have to spend it?
I do not know.
What was the question?
And this is a...
How quickly do we have to spend each distribution of money that we receive? Is
like
there a time frame?
We got one in April, 200-something thousand.
Good question.
I wouldn't know.
And is there a cost for the regional council to facilitate a SWOT analysis?
No, it sounded like this is something the regional council does
not,
on behalf of.
It did not sound like that was something there was.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm guessing this is a multi-pronged approach. Like, this is going to come as a shock to you, but I'd like to see some of that go towards our first responders.
Yeah.
The training, yeah, and the training and the protective equipment and gear.
Well, I think that's all, I mean, that's why they do the SWOT analysis to see where we are on those things so that we can.
I know, I don't know who it was, but I wasn't at work. Someone came by and gave us Narcan. I mean, I have it in the back, but I don't know who it was.
Selling it at the pharmacy at Publix now, too. Right up on the counter, right next to the register. So it sounds like there's a consensus to bring back to the group a favorable opinion on doing a SWOT analysis and start laying out the next steps. All right. That's item number one. With that, we'll move into item number two, paid parking year-end review. At the end of each year, with the exception of last year, we've done a review of the performance of the paid parking program, in part because when I first got here, it was the first time we had gone to electronic kiosks and a third-party provider of that service. And since that time, especially with last year, not only was it a new contract with SP Plus, but there was also an expansion of the service area, where the council the previous year had asked to add some areas. So with that, I'll ask Commander Bingham to come on up to the table and talk a little bit about it.
Council.
Hello.
We had a very successful year with paid parking. Meaning successful is we have almost zero or very little calls that came into our agency in reference to parking, paid parking related issues. And any calls that came in, email, walk-ins, whatever, we just simply referred them over to SP Plus and they took care of them rather quickly. The expanded lots from last year account for about a little over 10% of the revenue for this year. Considering the small size, that's pretty substantial. And I say the biggest issue that we have, and this is a great issue to have, is talking with the local vendors, SP Plus, and the representatives. We're going to try to work something out as far as the resident parking program. We don't want to have everybody refile or reapply every year for this, but they currently have over 11,000 vehicles in the system. I think that's going back to the original paid parking program that we had, and there might be a lot of folks who moved out of town or moved out of state or whatever. So we're trying to find something that is easier to handle that. But everybody else that has registered, we haven't had any problems.
Any questions for PD on this past year's program?
I do have a question, speaking of resident. The one graph on page 2 of 2 at the bottom where it says resident vehicle count by month, it's interesting that for 2023, the resident vehicle count is lower than it was for 2022. Do we have any idea why that would be?
We can find out and let you know. That is interesting.
I know.
Something doesn't look right between July and October either for 2022.
Well, I think that's what Sandy was pointing out too, is that, you know, did we really have five times as many local vehicles in October from one year to the other?
Yeah. Some of them look right there.
And I know Ashley's not in the audience. I don't know if she put that data together.
She did.
She did?
Yeah. Got that directly from those people.
Okay.
Do we know how the 6 Ave North and the other parking lot did?
Yeah, those three lots, actually, the end zone, the 100 block, and then the parking lot behind Beachside Casuals. Like I said, they accounted for almost 11% of the overall revenue, considering the size, especially with 6th Avenue and the limited spaces there. Did fairly well. No major issues. There were some issues in the very beginning that we identified. To be really transparent, they're very small issues. We had previously installed 2-hour parking only signs years ago, and that got overlooked at the beginning of the paid parking season. Sorry, there were some conflicts and people were getting confused on that. So we had those removed and then we put them back up after paid parking was over.
We did also get nicer wraps for the kiosks in the off season.
Yeah, nicer wraps.
Nicer wraps.
Thank you very much.
A plasticky material, but we'll see
but
how
they're
that
not goes. Garbage bags. That is the key.
with a clear top for the solar panels to stay active.
Charged. Nice. Yeah.
Exactly. And if you also notice in the memo that we provided, the police and administration have no recommended changes.
Right.
If there were changes that the council wanted to make for next year's parking program, this would be the time to bring them up to us. Whether it was expansion of the area, changing the days of the week, changing the rates, so that we could have time to research and come back to you before the actual start of next paid season. At this time, we have no recommendations for you. But if you have recommendations for us, we'd be more than happy to hear them at this time.
I want to ask the total listed number of vehicles, 127,000. What is that in comparison to 2022? I didn't see that in here. Maybe I missed it. Total number of vehicles, roughly?
I don't think we have it for 22 listed.
It's a 50% increase in revenue. Obviously, some of that's attributable to the
new split and the expanded area.
I was surprised to look at the old split. I was going to start my own little side company to come and run your parking business, because numerically that's impressive. It's nice to see that that's a big number. It's a big jump, 327 to 517.
And it is that they're getting a lot more compliance, ease of use with the apps.
And people are getting more used to it.
Any other thoughts from council? Keep doing what we're doing?
Carry on.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
With that, we'll move on to item C, city attorney search discussion, and I'll turn it over to DCM Nelson.
Good evening. As you all are aware, we first posted the city attorney position in mid-October with the intention of posting it for 1 month. After a month, we only had 3 candidates, 2 of which were viable candidates that met the minimum qualifications. So we went ahead and extended it. It is now listed as open until filled. I would recommend that we leave it open until you all have made a selection and an offer has been accepted, just to give us as much flexibility as possible. We did just recently get two new applications in, and so that brings us to a total of six. It's not a big number.
Qualified.
No, of the six, only three met the minimum qualifications.
Okay.
So those are the three that I sent you the resume packages for last week. I hope you've all had a chance to review those. And we tonight are just looking for some direction from you. If you would like to go ahead and set up an interview with one of those candidates or all three of those candidates, we can do an initial interview if you would like, and then decide to bring in person for a second interview, or if you all are considering just maybe talking to a local candidate, we could go ahead and just set up an in-person interview with either of the local candidates or both. If you choose to do an initial interview with a candidate that's out of state, we will not be able to do that on the Zoom platform like we did last time. However, on the advice of Sandy Robinson, if you all want to engage in a Zoom interview with that candidate, as long as you all are present in the room, we could set the candidate up on a television screen for you all to, or a computer monitor for you all to interview by Zoom, as long as you all are present. So we have some options, and we can do nothing. We can wait until after, you know, a week or two, or after the first of the year, to see if we get some more candidates. Or if you all are, if there's a consensus to move forward with one or more of the candidates, we could go ahead and start setting up some interviews for you.
It seems that one of the candidates definitely had experience in local government and was definitely above them, and I think the others, but I mean, I think that we need to get somebody sooner than later. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'd suggest go ahead and interviewing that individual, and but I'm open to interviewing the others too. But the other ones didn't have, one wasn't local and the other one didn't have experience in local government.
Not as direct yet. That candidate, the other local candidate has Department of Health. But I assume you're talking about David Miggett, who has municipal and county attorney experience, and he is in the local area. So there's certainly nothing to stop you all from setting up an interview with just that candidate if you would like to do that step initially, and then
if we interviewed that candidate and weren't happy, we could still go back and interview the other candidates, right?
Of course. And meanwhile, you know, we're still, the job is still open, and so there's always that potential to get more candidates in the door. I will say that this is not a great time of the year historically for us in any type of candidate search. We see a lot of times that people just are not out there applying and submitting resumes during the Christmas holidays. Thanksgiving to Christmas is one of the slower times. So a lot of times after the first of the year, we will see, you know, a higher number of candidates coming in. So,
when did we advertise this?
Mid-October, I think it was the 15th when we first opened it up.
Right before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Or wait, October. Yeah. So
October. Before holidays.
No, it was not actually 2 months. It was out there for a little bit before.
It's out there for a little bit. And like you said, Corey, if you all have a candidate that you know, feel strongly that you do want to talk to, sometimes it is better to go ahead and set those interviews up so that you can see if there's still an interest to move forward.
I don't necessarily feel comfortable interviewing only one person. Especially if we decide not to go with that person. I would say if we're going to do an interview, that we would do all three qualified candidates. And if one of them is on Zoom, we should do all of them on Zoom, just for fairness and consistency's sake. I don't know if we're going to be able to fit that in before
the
Christmas end of the year. I mean, if we can, I think we should. I just, it's for all the reasons you just said, it's a challenging time. Does anybody disagree?
No, I agree with you. I'm not comfortable with just interviewing one candidate, really.
Yeah, I think the results speak for themselves. I'd rather interview all three. And
then we at least have the whole field.
We only have, what, 1 week of productivity if we were to interview them, which is next week, because then the following week is Christmas Eve basically. And then New Year's Eve. So,
how long was the last candidate search? How long did that take?
It was 6 months from the time we opened the position to the time our city attorney was seated.
So
So until the attorney was seated.
Yes, after the selection was made, it was still another couple of months before she could relocate.
Because there's contract negotiation, and then also they have to give notice and all of that. It's painfully long.
But basically, we had a larger field earlier. At this time, we would have had a much larger field.
Yep.
It was also a little more publicized that we had the city attorney opening.
It gained a little bit more attention.
Not the way we wanted it.
Unintended publicity. Definitely got there.
But even the time before, we had a lot more.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. That's true.
We had, and time of the year does seem to make a difference as well. But if you all are interested in talking to these three initially, there's nothing to stop you from doing that, and then you can decide if you want to keep any of them in the running and move to the next steps, or just wait until we see what the pool's going to look like. If you do want to go ahead and set up interviews, though, you know, I would suggest, and I don't know what all of your availability is going to look like over the next couple of weeks. I expect it's going to be kind of difficult. But if you could possibly find one afternoon to block out all three interviews. They don't need to be very long, really. I would say no more than 30 minutes apiece with each candidate, which would put you all in the room for at least an hour and a half.
Can we do it by Zoom as well?
Mm-hmm.
We can't.
No,
I'm for interviewing all three, but my schedule between now and Christmas is part of the first of the year is super tight. So I would, my suggestion would be maybe the first or second week in 2024. That's just personal.
Well, I think we need to make sure we have questions. I mean, what we're prepared, right?
All right. Well, we'll have the questions that you all used in the last process, and we can get those out to you and get your feedback. If there are any changes you want to make. So I think that we can put that together fairly quickly.
Okay.
As soon as you all can provide us with some availability, and we can nail down some dates.
And just like we do with the board interviews, I don't think we all have to be here because we'll be able to watch them or listen to it later. But we ask the same questions of each of the candidates in that preliminary interview. So I would say maybe a doodle poll to see what we can do in the next.
And we're thinking maybe after the first of the year is going to be.
I'm available.
Take a shot.
Yeah.
We can try it. We can take all of your availability. It would be great if you have a forum in the room, if we at least have four who are able to be there for all of them. Yeah, we can go ahead and send out a poll and see what we're looking at. And then we'll try to get it scheduled as soon as we possibly can. We do run the risk of losing any viable candidates too if you wait too long. But once we reach out to them and let them know and get it on the schedule, that way we can tell them that for sure that they're still under consideration. That sometimes helps too. Okay.
But we'll have that. We will ask the candidates the exact same questions, right? Mm-hmm. There's not going to be anything else. So if Dan, you're not here, you're going to get the same information that we all get.
Right. Is everybody comfortable with that? Mm-hmm. We'll start with a poll and see who's available on which dates, and if we can get one date that has at least four of you guys that are all consistently available. We'll confirm that then before we send anything up. And the interviews will be in here, and we'll put up a computer monitor for the candidates. Everybody good with that process? All right, and in the meantime, we'll go ahead and dust off those questions from last time and send those out to you and start getting some feedback on those if you guys want to add anything to that or change anything about that. Okay?
Okay, you got what you need.
Gives me what I need. Thank you.
Thank you.
That will dive into item D, draft RFP for ticketed events.
All right.
With me in case we have some event-specific questions. All right. So at the October briefing, we discussed a pilot program for ticketed events. Since that is an exception to policy, we recommended that we put out an RFP to determine who would produce that event. So So we've put together a draft RFP with the technical specifications and the evaluation procedures that we would use in order to determine which producer we would choose. So we're looking for feedback and direction from you if you agreed with our scope and what our thoughts were for that.
Looks good to me.
I liked it.
Did you discuss tying this in with one of the other ongoing events that we had?
In the last briefing, we did discuss keeping it as a one-off event, okay, separate from the festivals that we currently have. Okay, so our second question is, would you prefer for us to wait to put the RFP out until after Latham is redeveloped?
No.
I say no.
Who knows when that will be?
Right.
I think the time is right for this.
Yes, yeah, so the timing might be a little tricky. What we would recommend doing is picking a date in a month, say May 2025, when we put the RFP out. So if by then construction starts, it would push everything back. So that's the only thing that we may run into. But if you're comfortable with it, we're good to go.
I think you can always put that caveat in whatever agreement.
Good?
I just say, I mean, I saw the point ranking system, but I didn't see, like, is there a minimum? I didn't see, like, okay, under X.
So typically what we do with the selection committees is you earn points based on what items you
correct
hit or miss.
Yeah, I get that.
And then whichever scores the highest is generally who we choose or
so
recommend to council to approve.
Okay. I wasn't sure if there was like a, like under this, you're not going to get in or like.
If no one gets above 60, we don't do it at all.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that's what I'm.
But even if that's the case, we don't like any of them, we don't have to approve.
Okay.
Right. We don't have to approve any of it.
That's why, like I said, when I saw our point system, I'm assuming that it was all just kind of cumulative. But then I'm like, is there a, what's like, where's the A grade? Where's the B grade? You know, is it 98 and above? Or are you looking for, you know, that's where I lost it.
Most of it's subjective, right? Based off of the score.
Mm-hmm. Some of these things, you know, you can provide.
And Molly, the way we've prepared this RFP, you and I did not have the conversation on this. Did envision that an award of the RFP would go back in front of City Council?
Typically, that's how we've done it. We would take it to a council meeting to give our recommendation, and then you all would give the formal approval.
So we can make sure that when we bring that back to council, that we bring it back like a normal RFP package, so you can see how many people submitted and what their relative score were in comparison to one another, and who finished top based on the ranking that we have put together. Sounds like a plan.
Perfect. Good.
Thank you.
All right.
I know. Why would you jinx yourself like that?
Wait till I'm done, please.
Exactly.
I forgot. I'm always going to be there.
Obviously, you want the higher the better, but.
We'll move on to item E, gateway signage initial discussion. I'll turn it over to our CIP project manager, Molly.
So at the budget showcase, we introduced the citywide gateway signage as one of our new CIP projects. We've identified five signs or five areas where we would like gateway signage to be, which are listed on our memo here as Beach Boulevard at Adventure Landing, which is on the private Adventure Landing property, Beach Boulevard at Penman Road, which is city property, at A1A and 19th Street South, which is also city property, A1A at the Duval County Line, which is part of the DOT median, and then A1A at Seagate, which is also DOT. So we've reached out to DOT, we've reached out to Lynn Allen, we've spoken with our own planning and development department about our sign ordinances, what we can and can't have. At this point, in terms of design and brand strategy, we would recommend putting an RFQ out for a design firm to have someone come in and give us some ideas on design, if you're all good with that.
Mm-hmm. A1A at 19th Street South. Wouldn't that be 19th Ave? North?
Ab South.
I think it is Ab South.
Ab South.
Yes, yeah, right there. It's that civic sign just south of Huguenot, or now Fountain View Park.
The one. It's the one that has all of the nonprofit monitors.
Okay.
That one that needs a good pressure washing.
Yes.
Correct. It should say, and we should say Ab.
Needs a lot of.
You're correct. It's Ab.
It's Ab.
It's Ab.
We all knew it.
And our thoughts or our assumptions at this point would be that these signs would kind of guide in the future our park signs and gateway signage for the Urban Trails project.
There definitely needs to be some continuity between them. That's for sure. We're yes. lacking that.
Yeah.
We're consistent. We're being inconsistent.
Is there any thought about? I mean, we're asking. That's great. We have $65,000 budgeted for design, but is there any thought about just currently using design? Some of the design, one of the designs we currently have, or are we looking for something that's gonna?
You mean in terms of the logo and the brand standards?
Correct.
We would submit all of that to the design firm. A year or so ago, I came to council for park signage, and it wasn't loved, put it that way. And we just used the logo and some fresh paint.
There's definitely some professional guidance that would be beneficial here. No offense.
Oh, no, okay. Not taken. Not my expertise.
When you take a look at the signage that we have right now, it varies tremendously. We actually removed the gateway sign at the south end because it looked like it had been on fire for 30 to 60 seconds at some point in its lifespan.
It may have been.
The one at the north end has more of an image that looks like the city seal. The gateway at Penman, which is our gateway now, is beige and brown. Mm-hmm. And doesn't match anything with regards to our brand, either logo or seal.
It would look great as the entryway to a ski resort.
And it's poorly lit at night.
And it's poorly lit.
Yes, like a national park entrance. Mm-hmm. It would look perfect for that. And then when you look at our actual park signage, they're the small tombstone monument signs, and they're in teal with the lettering and the seal on it. So they're all over the board. But like Molly said, when she came in front of the council last year and showed some images of what the park's signs could look like, the smaller monuments, doing them the same way we've done the water tank at this point in time, they don't look nearly as good in small scale when you're up close to them. So getting some professional assistance to play off of our logo, our seal, our mission, our vision, and taking all of that into account to come up with a brand and working with our communications manager as well. Is a direction we think we need to go to come up with some options for final consideration.
Molly, the most prominent of all the signs probably is the beach and Third. Are we just going to do downtown related signs as a separate project? Okay.
Yes, this is specifically gateway.
I'll put the sledgehammer on that one.
Signage, yeah, but we are. That is.
Line me up.
I will also say,
council project
with a design firm or bringing someone else in, they will also be able to take into account the long term maintenance. That's not something that necessarily an investor.
This is why I do medicine.
Experts in.
This is why I work in a hospital. All
right. Okay.
Can we make sure, is Dick's Height still around? I thought, no.
I'm assuming some of the signs will be some kind of light form at night, because the ones currently have, it just.
There are several elements that could be included in the monument signage, and that's something that we'll bring to you as far as lighting, potential water, landscaping, those kinds of things, height, and all those elements.
The Beaches Museum sign has really raised the bar. For
you have.
I got mixed on natural gas and perpetual tiki torches, so I was right there with you.
The eternal flame.
Oh, now I'm gonna have that song in my head.
Yep. Thanks, Molly.
Just right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Now you can jinx the meeting.
Yes.
Takes us down to item F, CRA project funding. This is really more of just a conversation with council to get a little bit of guidance. Several months ago, I was having a conversation with the Beaches Energy Director. And the Beaches Energy Director has been here for between 8 and 9 years. And he asked a question of me that I didn't know the answer to. And in doing a little bit of research, the answer I got was, well, that's just the way we've always done it. But the question was, when the first major project was done in downtown for the CRA infrastructure improvements, the one that just finished up a year or so ago, the CRA paid for all improvements associated with that project, with the exception of Beaches Energy utility conflicts. Anywhere there was a utility conflict, Beaches Energy absorbed the cost within their annual operating budget to make all of those utility adjustments based on a new sewer line or a new stormwater pipe. Coming into this project, Beaches Energy was planning on doing the same thing, absorbing it in their annual budget, and they might need to do a little reprioritization of some of their undergrounding. But the question was asked of me from the director, if the CRA is paying for all of these improvements, why aren't they paying for the relocation of Beaches Energy utilities? With the escalation in cost of the downtown project, this next phase that we're just awarded, obviously the impact of Beaches Energy has gone up with the cost of the project going up as well. It was originally, I think, envisioned at between a $12 and $15 million project, and now it came in at just under $30. Beaches Energy is looking at probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $400,000 plus over the next 2 years for their utility conflicts and the handling of those. So again, in asking with people, they said, well, that's just the way we did it, starting with the first downtown project, and that's the way we've done it on this previous project. So the policy question for council is that the way we should continue to do it going forward? Should we look at changing it going forward? Should we look at changing it on this project? I don't really have a preference one way or the other, other than it was asked of me from Beaches Energy, why is everything else on the project paid for out of CRA with the exception of the electric utility?
So there's no policy statement in place previously that...
None that we could find. When it was brought up with the CRA at their last meeting for some input, it was relayed to the CRA that I would be bringing it up at this briefing. The CRA said that they would like to see it continue in the way that it has gone, which is Beaches Energy paying for their utility conflicts as they arise. But you all hold the purse strings, and you're ultimately the final decision makers, so I figured I'd put it in front of you and see if you had any thoughts.
Is that how it works when Public Works is involved and there's a project they're doing and Beaches Energy is involved? Do they pay for that stuff too? Or is it just with the CRA where Beaches Energy absorbs that cost?
It depends. There have been projects where Public Works has had conflicts and they've paid for the relocation out of the contingency associated with the project. So there isn't really a rhyme or a reason. But we're just trying to get some clarity for how we do things going forward.
I kind of lean towards doing it with the CRA funding because that funding is in the area where the businesses and in the downtown area, where if it goes to Beaches Energy, the cost pretty much spreads out across the whole community to everybody through the electric bills. I mean, I'd rather see the TIF funding absorb that because it is a benefit in that area and part of the projects we're doing, but I'm open either way.
And as I told
you, saying for it to come out of the CRA budget,
correct? Mm-hmm. Instead of just because I mean, if you leave it in Beaches Energy, then it distributes to anybody buying power throughout the city.
Is this project specifically for the downtown, or I guess I was under the impression that it's
The policy question I'm asking is really more of a global policy question, but the CRA project is what brought it to light, that the CRA is paying for everything on the project except for. So they're paying for sidewalks, for roads, for curbing, for stormwater, sanitary sewer, potable water, paying for all of that to be replaced, relocated, et cetera, except Beaches Energy.
And the only reasoning was because that's why we always did it that.
That's what we did on the last major infrastructure project. And again, even if your direction was to pay for it out of CRA, it could be the next phase that we started.
The question is, if there's other utilities like cable, like anything else that's from an outside agency, are we gonna then, does that require us to pay for those people?
I don't know from a legal perspective if we're required to. I think telecom has to
be setting a standard.
Yeah, I mean, in this case, it's all publicly owned utilities that we're talking about as opposed to anything private.
In this particular situation, but we could pretty quickly come across AT&T and, mm-hmm. and a lot of other utilities that are going, well, you're paying for you're paying for Beach's energy, why aren't you paying for ours? But I mean, I think we could, I mean, we could be specific to Beach's
energy.
Well,
one's private, one's public.
I understand, but I mean, yeah, in this case, that scenario will come up.
And then that would be a policy, a written something that says this is what
just
we will
Beach's
do,
energy.
Not anybody else. Only we will yeah. do this.
Other than we faced anything like that in the past that you're aware of?
Probably be more of a Dennis question than anything. Anytime Dennis runs into a private utility, it's always the private utility required to move what they have. So whether that's Comcast, IQ Fiber, Verizon, doesn't matter, they have to move it.
Just my concern is anything additional to go on the people paying for utilities with Beach's energy. I mean, we've raised it, you know, that's been a struggle the last couple of years. I would like to try to find a way to discount it if possible. Or just not add on more to what they have to pay.
We do have a lot of upcoming infrastructure and work to be done.
Yep. This project we're in right now is going to be 2.5 years, and then there's more phases after that.
Does the CRA not want to pay for it for any specific reason beyond just having each project be more expensive?
I believe the statement they made at their meeting was there's no improvement to the electric utility, so the CRA shouldn't be paying for it because there is no related improvement. The roads are going to be new roads, new water lines, new sewer lines, but the electric is the electric is the electric.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true either, because as we progress in time, newer equipment comes out, better equipment comes out, better switches, better transformer. I mean,
and yeah, moving things, they're not putting in. If something's been there for 10 years, they're not going to put in 10-year-old
right.
yeah. technology. I know what you're saying.
My knee-jerk reaction is we ended up with however $1 million left over in the southern end, CRA. That probably could have been used in that regard. You know,
can't.
No.
Southern TIF funds have to stay in
the southern. No, not towards
at the time.
At the time.
Oh,
yeah.
As you're previously saying.
Yeah. Had Beecher's Energy been funded out of that, there probably wouldn't have been all that residual left over. So now comes the question, are we in the same boat?
I can do a little bit more research and see if it makes sense to bring back a more formal policy, and we'll check some of the legalities of the private versus the public utility ownership, see if that makes a difference. At this point, I'm not concerned because of the duration of the project. You know, Beach's Energy has quite a bit of discretionary funding for undergrounding on an annual basis, and as I talked about with the director, Alan Putnam, was that if we need to slow down some of the undergrounding in other portions of the system to do what we need to on this project, that's what we'll do, because that's you know, that's not have to do, that's nice to do in preservation of the system going forward. But we'll do a little bit more research and see if it makes sense to bring back a policy on this, so that not just for today, but 5 or 10 years down the road,
right,
when people are looking for what we do and why we do it, we go back to some type of a policy document and say, here's why we do it this way.
Yeah, and I'd rather see us in a different boat than we were at the south end when we hadn't been used for.
Okay.
Well, so
yeah, but you get my point.
Yeah. Like the project on 4th Avenue North, if there were any Beach's Energy work that would need to be done, who would have paid for that? Or is there any that's being done?
I don't know. On some of those projects, they, you know, again, if it's a small conflict, Dennis might just be doing it right out of the contingency. If it's a big enough item, I think it was Jacksonville Drive we had where there was a conflict, and I think the South End CRA paid for that conflict.
My understanding was that was because the conflict was created by the CRA moving the sidewalk, and so the CRA yeah. agreed that this was caused by us, so we will pay for it.
Yeah.
But if it weren't for that, you know, yeah. how would it be done? Generally.
And again, it sounds like it's all over the board.
Yeah.
It's just based on who's in each department head position at the time the conflict arises. But we'll try to develop some consistency and bring something back to you for it, just so there's clarity, because it doesn't sound like it's very clear in-house, and we want to make sure we get it straightened away. Future briefing topics. Take them and pass them around. discussing January. We have three items, and again, this will be Deputy City Manager Nelson will be spearheading that briefing. The first item will be city property for construction use. Again, there's no written policy in place. There's a practice, and the practice has been that we've allowed private developers to use city property for the purposes of developing their private property, and we have a teacup agreement and a fee that goes with it. But you know, Dennis Barron has scratched his head and said, I didn't come up with this practice. It was in place when I got here. There's no policies to tell us when we do it, when we don't. And there's nothing that tells us whether or not the dollar amount we're charging is correct or the responsibility we're putting back on the contractor is correct. So we'll be looking for some clarity on that topic. Stormwater rates, again, Dennis Barron is going to talk to you a little bit about starting the process of overhauling our stormwater rate structure. He has finally completed the, or not he, but one of our consultants has finished doing the stormwater inventory, stormwater asset inventory for our system. And now he's prepared to actually do some projections of what revenue is needed to maintain our system over the next 5 to 10 years. As a little bit of background, the stormwater rates that we have in place, the $5 per ERU, are the same dollar amounts that were in place at the inception of the stormwater program going back 25 plus years ago. So that rate has not changed in all its time of existence. The third item on there is Gonzales Park project funding. Jason's going to talk to you a little bit about the status update of where we are on the project and some alternates that he's considering based on input from the residents in the area, and how we would also propose how we would pay for that going forward. And then obviously, if there's anything that needs to be added, whether there's additional city attorney candidates, et cetera, we'll add those items onto the agenda as well. If you know, my evaluation was supposed to be on January 8th. I spoke with the mayor last Friday. We are pushing that out to February 12th, so we can discuss it there. And if you all notice in very fine print between February and January, there's a little bar that says January 24th or 25th special council workshop comp plan review. And Molly, did you want to address that with council?
Yes. So
she's back.
Heather would like to hold a workshop with all of you at the end of January. We initially were thinking January 29th, but that's the first night of legislative action days. Mm-hmm. So you'll all be in Tallahassee. So we're thinking either the 24th or the 25th in the evening, starting at 5:30, if you have availability on either of those days.
And if you'd like, Molly can send out a doodle poll. You can all respond to it, or she'll send you an email with the two dates and times, and you can reply to that.
Okay. Right now, I'm available.
All seven of you are here. I don't know if you all have access to your calendars and you want to lock it in right now.
Or
the
25th
available.
25th. 24th easy.
I can rearrange if I need to.
I can send you a doodle too if you guys want a day or so to think about it or look at your calendars, and we'll get everything together.
Is that going to be 5:30?
Sorry.
5:30.
Unless there's a better time. That seems to be an okay time for everybody.
That Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I'm free anytime.
Okay. I'll work with Heather. I think she has some scheduling issues in January. She might be out of office for a week or so in there. So I'll work with her calendar as well and make sure Kimberly Horn is available for those days as well. Yeah. So, okay, we'll send out a doodle.
Thank you. With that, I have no miscellaneous items for you. Are there any committee assignments?
You emailed us about the city truck. Was that for the miscellaneous item for tonight?
Oh, yeah. About
animal control. Control. Yes.
The animal control truck?
Yes.
But we're here.
Thank you. I wrote it on a different piece of paper, and I didn't bring it down with me. Long and short is police department's looking to buy a replacement vehicle. They've got a vehicle that our fleet shop has looked at and said, you need to replace this sooner rather than later because of its condition. As the police department has gone around to different dealerships, they're finding that none of the dealerships will hold a vehicle because their inventory is so limited. Mm-hmm. So we have an item on the December 18th meeting for authorization for the city council to consider up to $55,000 for the purchase of a new vehicle. What we're wondering is council going to be okay if we issue a purchase order but do not act on that purchase order until December 19th for the purposes of holding a vehicle and we find one on the lot between now and next Monday?
Buy it.
Can't buy it. Can't buy it until after approval from council, but if you're okay with us issuing a PO but not triggering the PO till after council consideration. I think we can go on that.
Can I ask, if you mentioned structural deficiency, is this something that, like, should it be under warranty? Is this something like, how old is the vehicle?
It's driven on the beach a lot, and I think that has a lot to do with it, doesn't it?
Yeah. We'll let Chief handle this one.
I didn't want to leave Mike and Tom out here on this one. What year is it?
2019.
Okay, 2019. It's an animal control truck. Our former employee in 2019, it was reported to us to the city garage that he had not been missing the truck off.
Oh.
And it was sort of rust out. And so we conducted an internal investigation, and for that and a few other issues, he's no longer employed with us, and I made Mike aware of it at the time. I said, just to let you know, I'm going to write this thing called the new animal control officer falls through the floorboard, which he's fixing to. So, that will not happen again. That was unfortunate.
But that's kind of what I thought was occurring. And I was just in the back of my mind, was like, hopefully we have a policy now where we wash it, because like, that was one of those.
That's what's supposed to happen.
And years and years of somebody walking along, true story, certain people would walk along, get a handful of dirt, and stick it up underneath the edge, and then go, oh, you got to wash it again. But that was just to give the young guy a hard time.
And there was also some other issues that I can tell you all about.
That's a conversation for a different meeting.
Definitely. I approve that. I don't want anybody falling out the bottom or doing the Flintstone breaking, so I think that's a reasonable.
Is that the direction you need on that?
Yes, sir.
It will not happen again.
Any committee assignment reports?
Back on the miscellaneous, I did mention to you, with the approval of the council and the mayor, was able to travel for National League of Cities, but was not approved as a member. So I wasn't sure that we actually went through that process. I thought that we had approved becoming members of National League of Cities, but if not.
I thought we did approve it.
I thought so too, but I wasn't sure. So maybe we didn't, but maybe
we should. Did you go back and listen to the briefing audio?
I did not. Oh. I did not. I hadn't had a chance.
Would council like us to put something on an upcoming meeting to consider being a member of National League of Cities?
Can you go back and get the, I know what we discussed before?
Yes.
That'd be a yes.
He's like, well, you'll do that.
Okay. Anything else?
I have two quick things. One, if you haven't seen Representative Michaels hosting a farm share food distribution on Saturday, December 16th at One Beach Church, One Beach? The Baptist Church right over here by St. Paul's. Anyway, would love if any of you want to come out and help with the distribution. We've got JFRD as well as JBPD. On board to help with some of the heavy lifting and traffic.
What time?
The actual food distribution starts at 10. We're going to start set up at 7. So really, any time in there will be great.
Okay.
Festive attire, city logos encouraged.
What day?
The 16th. And I'll make sure you guys get the flyer. It just got sent out today. And then just kind of a preview, Palms Presbyterian has been putting together some meetings to kind of bring together the kind of social service provider organizations in our community to see where the gaps are, to see what they can do as a congregation, but as well as facilitating any conversations in terms of the needs of our community. And I was met with their leadership as well as Mayor Ford and Mayor Brown last week. So more to come on that. At some point, if a organization comes around, it probably won't be a formal nonprofit organization or anything like that, but we may want to have a member of this group representing the city on that group. So just keep an eye out for that to come. But so far, it's just discussions. And I know the very first gathering that they had, I know we had two members of the police department were there, as well as LaToya from the Carver Center. So we had good representation to start out with.
Several things I wanted to bring up. I brought this up at the council meeting that I have posted information about Pimmon Road on my website, sandygolding.com, and I shared it with Robin Smith and Michael Durbaum and asked, could the city of Jacksonville post something on their website so that people could get updates, kind of like what we do with our public works information. They're looking into it, but they don't know how to go about making that happen was the response I got. I've talked to Mike about could we put something on the City of Jacks Beach's website about the Pimmon Road project so people have some place to go to get updates about it. And then likewise, share it via newsletter too, and the Urban Trails project. I think we talked about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Getting that out in the newsletter, because we didn't have the meeting scheduled for December 13th, I think, when the newsletter went out. But I think I would like to see us do a little bit more on communication if we could, because I'm sure you guys are hearing the same thing I'm hearing. You know, we didn't know about this, you know, so anything we can do to try to get more information out, I think would be very beneficial. And then I think you guys saw the email that was sent out about from the Florida League of Cities about Senate Bill 280, which is the vacation rental bill.
11 strikes and you're out.
Yeah, exactly. I just wanted to bring up some things. Just recently, I was contacted by some different people. One was a family that moved from Jacks Beach, moved away from Jacks Beach because where they lived, they were surrounded by vacation rentals, and they felt they had no other option but to move because their quality of life was affected. And I know somebody else who contacted me. She said she feels that her only option is to move. You know, I'm hearing this. I keep hearing this, and so it's, you know, it's still a priority, and it's still an important issue. And I'm conveying this stuff to our legislators. In particular, I got it via email, which I was glad I did, from the people who moved away from Jacks Beach. And they explained in detail what they lived through and why they moved. And so I'm hoping if you guys hear things like that or get information like that, please share it with Rep. Michael and Senator Yarbrough, because the more information we can share with them, the better, I think. Anyway. The other thing, well, and I already shared at the council meeting the priorities that were approved by the Municipal Administration Policy Committee. But also wanted to mention, because I'm on the Advocacy Committee, I don't think anybody else is. I think I'm the only one, right? There's two bills that have been filed that I think we need to be watching, and I think we are going to be watching, which is residential building permits, which basically is not a good bill, and repeal of the local business tax, saying that we couldn't have local business taxes anymore. And so to try to fight these, the advocacy committee was asked to get information from our cities about, you know, how much revenue are we getting from the local business taxes and where are we using that money, and also some information about building permits and that sort of thing. And so I've passed that off to Mike. Mike is going to be getting that information, and we'll get it back to the League of Cities to help build a case, you know, about why these things that they've proposed in these bills are bad for municipalities. So just wanted to give you guys those updates. The only other thing I wanted to mention too, I don't know if any of you that were there at the conference went to, there was a really good workshop about How to Talk So Your Legislator Will Listen and How to Listen So Your Legislator Will Talk. Did you go to that one?
Yeah. I'll talk to you afterwards.
I thought it was really, really good. But I just wanted to share a few things since before we go to Tallahassee. I think we heard this over and over again. Be good to their staff and work with their staff as much as we can, especially during legislative session because they're so busy. They don't always have time to meet with us. Work on relationships prior to the start of session, which, you know, we're doing a good job at that. Yes, exactly. And the other thing was don't wait until a bill gets to committee. We need to start talking to our legislators, you know, well in advance. Now that we've seen Senate Bill 280, you know, we can start communicating with them. There is a committee meeting this Wednesday, which is starting that process. But some other things that were mentioned that I thought was interesting, that they said sometimes when the bill gets to committee, the cake is baked. I didn't like that. Then,
and doesn't make it less true, unfortunately.
No, unfortunately. They also said sometimes they'll vote yes to get it out of committee in order to continue to negotiate. But if it still looks the same on the floor, they'll vote it down. So they were trying to help us understand, don't freak out if we vote yes, you know, because there's a strategy there. If we send an amendment in, if we request an amendment, which they recommend, if we're against something, please recommend alternatives. We should also work with the House sponsor on that same amendment, which, you know, I don't know if we've been doing that, but try to push it in both directions. And let's see. Oh, and I thought this was really good too, just for when we go to Tallahassee. Spend five minutes explaining our position, but then give them time to ask questions. You know, I think sometimes we have.
I don't even get us 5 minutes.
I know, and we have a lot that we want to say, but it was. I think they were. You know, I thought it was really good that they said, you know, give us some time to ask questions too. So I thought that was really good. And then another thing they said that I thought was really good was like instead of saying, you know, being kind of adversarial about why they voted yes on a bill that maybe we want them to vote no on, ask them, can you tell me how you got to yes on this bill? And I thought that was really good too. So some good things I wanted to share that I thought were very enlightening because there were like four legislators, two senators and two reps that were in this workshop. And Rebecca O'Hara facilitated it. She asked some really good questions, and I don't know if that one is recorded, but if it's recorded, we'll share it with you. Because
it was
good,
but I think I also feel that when it comes to our representatives, they're pretty accessible, and they've made themselves pretty accessible. Maybe that's not happening in other places in the state, but for us, I mean, even coming to our meeting, so I think that we don't have as big as a lift as maybe some other parts of the state are. Back to your point on short-term rentals. So when I went to the National League of Cities, one of the sessions I took was the short-term rental, and I provided a name of an individual, Kevin, I think is his name.
Yep.
He said that with he's with Airbnb, and they said that they're partnering up with all the other ones that are out there, Vrbo and Homestay and all the rest of them. And they're saying that they now have a database that they've created that you can upload a police report to their portal. And if you do, that individual, both the renter and the rentee, will be, I guess, blacklisted for lack of better words. They could either terminate them or suspend them for a certain amount of time. I provided that to you so that you could reach out to Kevin and find out some more in depth on that particular portal. But that's true. That's something that can work to our advantage.
The way it's worded in here, it's the port, and but I'm going to call him to get clarification, but the way it's worded, and of course the way it was on the website, it was just focused on police departments getting information from them, as
right.
opposed to police departments giving them information.
Well, he was
so,
explicit.
Yeah,
about
so I want, I definitely want to
yeah.
to find out from him.
And then in our committee on the Florida League, our priority and policy flip-flopped, and I won't get on my soapbox on how that happened, but there were some dirty deeds being done by a city attorney from down south who really had a priority on impact fees, and we don't have them in Jack's Beach, but I thought sovereign immunity would surely take the priority because it affects the entire state equally. But no, so it's now become the policy issue. They flipped it in the last meeting. But I was assured by the chair, Ms. David Cruz, and the CEO, Jeannie Gardner, that we would still be focusing pretty heavily on sovereign immunity because of the widespread impact it might have.
Well, I think like the Municipal Administration Committee, you made it a policy statement, right?
Yep.
And we made vacation rentals a policy statement too. So my hope is that we still have those in writing and that, you know, they're still going to be visible.
Yep.
While you're talking about legislative issues, just so you're aware, similar to last year, the Florida League is not setting up the appointments for groups to go up and meet with their legislators. So we've asked PAC, Jack Corey, and Aaron Ballas to set up those meetings for us. The first tier priority that we gave them was that you meet with Clay Yarborough and Kion Michael, since they are our local reps. The second tier was to meet with as many of the Duval delegation as they could. And the third were any specific individuals that Jack and Aaron felt that it would be good to meet with based on their sponsorship of bills or their influence on bills. So those are the three groupings that they're looking at in that order for setting up meetings.
I have a strong relationship with Dean Black, so if we can get in his office, that would be great too.
Well, he's part of the Duval legislative delegation.
Yeah. He's the chair, correct?
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
he's the chair. Anything else that you all want to talk about amongst yourselves? Since you can only do it in the sunshine, and this is a sunshine meeting, if you want to do it, now's the chance. Otherwise, I'll close the briefing.
Thanks for the information on the Form 6.
You're welcome. Yeah, we sent out an email just before this meeting of additional resources available for completing Form 6. Unfortunately, there is no local in-person training session to be held. The only thing we found is some resources through Florida League.
There's a Florida League of Cities webinar. Is that what, did you send, do you have access to
that?
The Zoom?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And there was some, I made myself a note. You have to log in. Well, this is, you're supposed to be able to, you can't log in until after the first of the year to be able to check and see if you can try to start, find a login for that time period. And then.
Well, in the webinar, he said that you could log in as a candidate, because apparently candidates can do that right now to look at it in advance, but then after the first of the year we can log in or create an account, mm-hmm. an official account. So supposedly there's some way to do it now as a candidate.
Yeah, that's gonna be an interesting form to fill out.
We have 7 months to do it.
Yeah.
So a couple of people playing basketball on the basketball court at Gonzales, and the basketball court looks phenomenal.
Oh, there's some pickleball already happening.
Yeah.
Out there
is there
too.
Really?
Some people brought their own net.
I was wondering if that was going to happen.
Their own net.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
They must have brought their own basketball net too, because there wasn't basketball nets yesterday.
Corey, was that your pickleball net?
You don't have to have a net, though, do you, right?
No, but it'll hurt when that ball comes through that hoop and hits you in the face.
Sounds like you guys are done.
Okay.
Yeah. Go twice. Meeting adjourned. Thank you all.